Good Earth is like the platform to change the food system in the country almost, which, you know, I guess is maybe an unusual way to look at a business, but...
Welcome to Common Brits, an infra podcast.
And I'm your host, Haley Craig.
Independent natural food retailers are as diverse and unique as the communities they serve. From urban to rural, East Coast to West Coast, small to large, there's one thing that these stores have in common: a deep commitment to providing healthy foods to their communities. In celebration of Infra's 20th anniversary, we're handing over the mic to 20 Infra members to share their challenges and triumphs in navigating the world of natural food retail. Are our common roots really so common? Let's find out. Today, we are joined by Mark Squires from Good Earth Naturals, and this is their story. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us today, Mark. Do you mind starting off by introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about your store?
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. So my name is Mark Squire, and I feel like I've been a grocery retailer my whole life, really, you know, and that's actually the truth. I came from Connecticut to California in 1969, and immediately, in fact, I had actually worked in a retail store in Connecticut when I was in high school, what we used to call a pill shop, kind of. So I came here, and I actually walked into San Francisco to, you know, what was the first natural food store that I had really been in, which had an emphasis on food. It was called New Age Natural Foods. And I just was floored by the whole concept. I mean, it was almost like my dream come true. And so shortly thereafter, I came out to Marin County, across Goldgate Bridge, and Good Earth had just been formed by a group of hippies. And so, you know, I was with my brother. We were both kind of young foodies. I immediately kind of said, this is what I want to do, you know. And so we started working for Good Earth, and in that first year of Good Earth's formation. So, and that was 1969. There was a lot going on. You know, I was sort of fleeing the Vietnam War era, and it was kind of so obvious that our culture was headed in the wrong direction in so many ways. So I was part of that, you know, dropout movement, and dropout basically meant drop out of the normal paradigm of going off to war and, you know, U.S. imperialism, which was even going on back then. I'm, you know, ashamed to say we still haven't grown out of that. But so, you know, food seemed like a, just like I've been reading a lot about organic agriculture in books, J.I. Rodale, and I was also a bit involved in the macrobiotic community. So there was a, you know, huge knowledge base of food is healing, and you know, the power thereof, that I sort of lucked out and got involved in, and that became sort of the foundation of basically Good Earth became a, you know, and I still continue to think that, you know, us independent retailers, it's like our chief role really in the world is about educating, you know, because, you know, as we've been able to educate, you know, our community about why organic was so important, you know, why nutrition was so important, and why the regular medical establishment was kind of lost in terms of, you know, their whole direction. The education became why we became successful as a small company. And we ended up having, you know, huge following all over the San Francisco Bay Area as sort of a node of change and bringing people, you know, real good food. You know, to me, it's strange that that's kind of a radical idea of nutrient density and the importance thereof and the foundation of soil health. And we're still learning that as a culture. But I continue to think that we that are out there day in, out teaching people about those issues are really, we're doing the work. And it's such vital work. And, you know, I've always kind of viewed myself as, you know, part of this food movement. And I think, you know, many independents do. And we get, you know, we're all in diverse parts of the country. So we sort of forget that, which sort of brings me to, you know, why infra. You know, to me, more than anything else, the reason that we became infra members pretty early on was because we really do feel like in sharing information and unity, you know, we strengthen all our voices. And that is such a critical part of what we do in infra. And, you know, not to mention the economic power that we wield. You know, one of my, you know, I think my lessons in the organic movement was I was very involved in Organic Trade Association for a while, and we would do lobby days in DC. And it always impressed me how when the industry hit about $50 billion, where, you know, I had been going in Senate offices as part of that for years, but when we hit $50 billion, you could drop that. When you went in an office, you could say, we're a $50 billion industry. And all of a sudden it became like, oh, you know, you guys are not just these little hippies doing something. You actually are a major player in the grocery world. And we need to start taking you serious. And, you know, in a way it's sad that, you know, money talks, but it does in, at least in those political circles. And I think it's helped us to get, you know, a lot more help for farmers, you know, other than the current situation that we find ourselves in, which is shocking, honestly, because, you know, I think the organic industry made a lot of inroads, mostly around pushing for government programs that encouraged what we call climate smart agriculture. And climate smart agriculture was really none other than what organic farmers had been doing forever, really, is putting compost in the soil, cover cropping, putting carbon in the soil, because carbon is the root of soil health. But, you know, this current administration has basically shut down all those programs. So we're really a little bit reeling with the pain of that. And I think it's going to set back the whole organic industry a lot because of the lack of government backing that we have been able to get prior. But
so kind of keeping in that tone with talking about, you know, your own ethics and Good Earth's mission, because your store was founded, you know, as you said, over 50 years ago, and you've always maintained this commitment to high quality organic food. How has your mission evolved over the years, and what has remained constant during that time?
Well, it's really only been I would say our mission really hasn't changed hardly at all. You know, we believed in organics day one, and you know, have encouraged that. One of the things that has made us successful as an organization is we've always been wary of, you know, what I call greenwashing. And, you know, as an industry, I think we've kind of seen one wave after another of, you know, either some entity kind of saying, oh, we want, you know, we see that organics is being pretty successful. We want a piece of that, but we don't want to do the work. You know, I think the current rendition of that is this whole thing of, I've actually told my staff here, please never use the word regenerative without coupling it with the word organic, because organic is regenerative, but not all regenerative is organic. And I would even make an argument for the fact that, you know, if some people's definition of regenerative allows for glyphosate use, and to me, that's not even regenerative. So I think over the years, Good Earth has played a part in helping the community to understand those things. And it's actually really created a situation where we have absolute loyal customers that will just rave about how important Good Earth is in their lives and stuff like that. So that loyalty, I don't think you get, you know, very easily. But I do feel like it's been, one, it's been hard earned, but also consciously earned and appreciated. You know, we need that support to be able to do what we're doing.
Awesome. Yeah. And I think especially today, people care a lot about putting their money into businesses they believe in and that they align with. So it's, you know, it benefits the little guys in this case. People want to support businesses that they agree with and feel are doing good in this world when so much bad is happening, right?
And that's really real. And I do think that's one thing that independents can actually, you know, should brag about. You know, I remember a little bit of a tidbit. You know, many years ago, I ran this ad and I basically said, you know, this probably goes back 20 years now, but I ran an ad and I basically at the bottom of it said, we are independently owned and we'll never be, was something along the lines of like, we'll never make decisions based on the next quarterly report. I was a little bit surprised, but, you know, I'm actually in the neighborhood of one of the founders of Whole Foods. And, you know, I don't think I'm out of step to tell this story, but it was Walter Robb called me up the next day and he said, "Hey, Mark, you know, I thought that was kind of a low shot you took," you know, and but it always amused me, you know, that he was so taken. I mean, he saw my ad and he kind of went like, "Ooh, he's hurting me where it counts," you know. So it is a real thing and should be, you know, I believe we should brag about it, you know, and it, because it's like all independent, whether it's independent media or grocery stores, you know, what we have is the ability to do the right thing, regardless of where the money shows we should maybe be going. And, you know, I think that is even in the world of grocery and slotting fees and all that kind of mess that the regular grocery industry is involved in. And so it's nice to have the freedom to do business the way we feel like it's ethical to do and not have to worry about stockholders, you know, breathing down our necks or whatever.
Yeah. And you talked previously a little bit about Infra, but I just wanted to ask, when did Good Earth join Infra and what kind of initially motivated you to want to become a member?
I think we were Infra member the first year of Infra, and it might have been the second year, but we were pretty early on there. You know, I think it was for us, it was a little bit having our arms twisted by some of the real founders, you know, Jimbo and Scott and Rex at New Leaf. You know, early on we were very involved. I actually really appreciated the store visits that we used to do and critique each other's stores. And we found it really, really valuable. And that was that networking piece. And in fact, I would say that, you know, we are now two stores and we may well be three that this year. We're looking at another site. You know, I would say that our involvement with Infra for us was really, it inspired us to grow as a business and really helped us tremendously because I think both Jimbo and Scott and Rex they were a little bit ahead of us in terms of, you know, they had multiple stores. And so just to kind of be involved with other grocers that had sort of taken those steps before us and could kind of, you know, help us to see what that looked like and also give just encouragement to, you know, open another store. And so just from a business point of view, it's been really, really, you know, very good to kind of understand how other retailers are doing it.
Yeah. Amazing. And another thing I wanted to ask about was the non-GMO movement and Good Earth's role in kind of shaping those organic standards for that movement. Could you just share what initially inspired you to take on that advocacy role beyond just, you know, running your store and selling groceries?
Well, like I think I said before, I've always viewed myself as part of a movement, an industry, and you know, I almost want to say secondarily a retailer. But it, to me, Good Earth is like the platform to change the food system in the country, almost, which, you know, I guess is maybe an unusual way to look at a business. But in terms of the non-GMO project, it was really Good Earth and Bob Gerner from Berkeley Natural and who was an infra member too at that point. And the third member was a co-op, the Big Carrot in Toronto. And I think, you know, we as retailers had just been learning a lot about the craziness of genetically modifying food and all the, you know, the shocking implications of that. And, you know, I think historically, at that point, the organic industry was dealing with too much construction and, you know, figuring out their way, that I don't think they just simply didn't have the bandwidth to really take on the GMO issue like they should have. So, and just to be clear, you know, the non-GMO project does not have any organic standards. I mean, their standard is just no GMO. It's that simple. So the project does allow glyphosate use, for instance, which sometimes shocks people. But I think the retailers that were involved felt like to carve that out and to, you know, bring that to the attention of the consumers was a valuable thing. And I can tell you right now that I still get heat from people in the organic industry for making that decision. And, you know, because I think some members of the organic industry kind of saw it as competition for the consumer. And it has been, I'm not saying that it hasn't, but I actually believe that what we really presented competition for was the natural industry, which, you know, it used to be that, you know, even in consumer studies, natural ranked higher than organic did, which to me is kind of shocking. And especially because I honestly believe that as an industry, we should really make an effort to recognize that if something's called natural, it really shouldn't allow pesticide use. So talk about competition for organic. Natural was the strong competition and remains so too. So I think that we should literally strike the word natural from our vocabulary unless it is organic, because organic agriculture to me is natural agriculture, and anything else is a little bit of greenwashing. So I sort of don't look back about the non-GMO project. I mean, this book, obviously it became the super successful as a seal. And I think it also had the impact of really helping to educate consumers about the genetically engineered issue, which was sort of not being talked about, you know, 15 years ago when it launched.
And I also would love to touch on sustainability a little bit as well at Good Earth, because that seems to be another, you know, core value for your store and your ethics. So could you just share more about some of the sustainability initiatives that you implement in your store and how they kind of shape your business?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that we have, pushed for sustainability in every issue, in every way we could, you know, whether it be solarizing. We're actually re-solarizing now because the panels are so much more efficient than they were, that we did the math and figured out that it actually was worthwhile for us to just switch out all the panels.
Oh, wow.
For better ones. But, you know, there's that. I always want to kind of, when I'm asked that question by folks, I always want to sort of encourage the thought to be around, you know, and this comes from me really feeling like organic agriculture is kind of it's a win-win-win-win-win thing, you know, from climate change to not poisoning our kids with pesticides to creating a higher nutrient density for all of our health and healing the environment as well. So it's such a powerful sustainability thing that we all need to recognize that the more organic food we're selling, that is probably the one thing that we can do that will make the biggest difference. And you know, a lot of times people think of solar and vehicles, but organic agriculture is it. So I do feel like I've been an advocate for our industry. Again, moving, you know, we should all be selling 100% organic food. You know, that's kind of where I come from. And I think grocers that are really doing their homework are realizing that that needs to be the goal. And that's where the consumer is going, I believe. Yeah. And as soon as they're educated. But I might highlight one other thing that I think Good Earth is doing that is, to me, creative and has been a super success is our composting operation, which we actually started it. We're 15 years into making compost. And it really started with the Good Earth team sitting down with a local organic farmer and crunching the numbers. And we kind of realized that we were spending enough with the local hauler, which is Marin Sanitary, to take it. At that point, they were actually taking it to landfill, which is a disaster from a climate point of view. But what we figured out is that for the same amount of money we were sending it to landfill, we could pay the organic farmer to haul it off and make compost out of it. So we started doing that. And it was a bit challenging because what we discovered is that we were a little bit in violation of some of the regulations that were in place. But we just kind of said, you know, screw it. There's too much at stake here for us to be deterred by, you know, some stupid, you know, government law. So we persisted, and we actually had to move the operation at one point because the county showed up and said, you know, everything you're doing is really good and ecological, and you're diverting all this stuff and keeping it out of our streams and everything, but you're making too much compost. So, you know, you have to spend $100,000 to make a concrete slab with, you know, all this stuff. And luckily at that point, we were able to just move the whole operation to a farm. And through that action, we actually kind of got around all the regs and, you know, continue to make, you know, we're making, you know, somewhere between 500 and 1,000 yards of compost a year. It's, you know, providing great compost for a farm that they need, and it's not costing Good Earth any more money to do it that way. So I actually have sort of been advocate of, you know, I think every grocery store should have a farm partner and that has a compost operation between them. And, you know, if anybody wants to come to California, I'd love to walk them through the whole program and show them how it works, because it's actually very doable. And yet, to me, it's an important, you know, very important climate change process that is, you know, healing instead of destructive. And you understand about, like, if food waste is going into a landfill, it's creating huge amounts of methane. And methane is a worse global warming gas than CO2 is. So the other part of the research is that if you put compost on ag land, you know, even like a half an inch of compost on ag land, the carbon in that ag land goes up and up and up and up. For like, studies are showing that 5 years after one application, the carbon is still growing in that land. And it's actually, when you look at the numbers, it's kind of phenomenal. In fact, I can remember it's 1/2 inch of compost will increase the carbon in soils by 11,000 pounds a year of carbon, which is huge. In fact, if you actually extrapolate those numbers, if we had the political will to put 1/2 inch of compost down on all the ag land in the world, which, you know, would be a big issue, but not unattainable, that single act would remove as much carbon out of the atmosphere as we have excess carbon in the atmosphere.
Wow.
So there's organic agriculture is a solution.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were starting to make inroads with the Biden administration for them to understand that, and which was great. And hopefully we'll get back there.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. And I love your mindset on sustainability and, yeah, the real life applications and things that you can actually do versus, you know, kind of just putting a shiny label on things and, you know, saying like, yeah, we have solar, we're sustainable, which is great, but also, you know, there's so much more that you can do. So I think that's really inspirational for our retailers. Okay, amazing. And then, so if you were to give some advice based on, because you have, you know, decades of advocacy and innovation that you've done at Good Earth, what advice would you give to other new retailers who want to make a real impact in their communities beyond just selling groceries at their store?
Well, you know, I guess I would say, don't be afraid to push back against government. perhaps. You know, I know I've gotten a little bit of a sort of reputation of being a grump or whatever, but you know, an example of that is the health department came in here about a year ago and we were using hydrogen peroxide to wash down our food service counters. And the Department of Health basically said, that's not good enough. We want you to use this. It's called QWERT. I think it's QWERT is like an acronym for this long quarto amino. So I did a little bit of Googling about it and discovered a few things like that it causes birth defects in mice in low dosages. And then also I discovered that the reason the health department liked it is because you'd wash a counter with it and no bacteria would grow on that counter for a week. And this stuff is nasty. And so I basically said, I ethically don't feel like I can even instruct my staff to use this shit. Excuse my French. You know, we had to go all the way up to the top of the county to get a variance for, you know, using a product that was hydrogen peroxide is pretty benign, which we did. But if I hadn't been stubborn, you know, I guess is the another way to say it, and pushed back, you know, they would have just forced us to do it. And so push back. I think, you know, I continue to come from the place like, you know, we make the laws and government works for us. And, you know, we shouldn't let them do things that just don't make any sense.
Okay, great. And then just to touch on products for a second, do you have any favorite local or unique products that you carry in your store that you want to shout out?
Well, you know, one of the things that when you talk about local production, and I know that many fellow Infra members fall into this category too, it's like we are all making food on site, right? And, you know, whether it's sandwiches or soup or, you know, deli. And I think it's really important to sort of keep talking about that as we're local production. You know, we are doing it. And sometimes I think we forget that, you know, it's like we have to buy a local thing to put it on our shelf for it to be local. But, you know, I just am sort of reminding everybody and myself too that we are local production. And when we're producing food, and that's a great thing, I think, for everybody. In terms of other products, we have always tried to support our, you know, super local farmers, and you know, especially the small farmers who I believe are doing sort of the most creative and most soil building. And so we have always sort of prioritized small farmers and local small farmers over, you know, bigger brand farmers. And you know, we're pretty proud of that. So that's what comes to mind.
Amazing. Yeah, when I've asked other retailers this question as well, most everyone has said either, yeah, their produce or specifically items from local farms, which I love. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on Common Roots, Mark. This has been a lovely conversation.
Thank you for tuning in to Common Roots. This episode has been made possible thanks to the hard work of Infra staff and Infra member contributors. To learn more about the retailers we serve, visit our retailer directory at naturalfoodretailers.com/retailer-directory.